This is the Wednesday, January 20th, 2021 morning session of the Portland City Council. We have a couple of acknowledgments we'd like to make this morning. First of all, this morning is President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris were sworn into office. I want to say that I was struck with an overwhelming sense of optimism and of hope. Today is a new day for our country, and it's full of promise and potential. We now have leaders at the very highest level of our nation who will work to unite our country, leaders who want to move towards a brighter future with intention and with urgency. We now have federal leadership who will guide our nation through pandemic recovery, create opportunities for those who've for far too long been prevented from thriving, and strengthen our democracy. 2020 was without question a challenging year for nearly everyone in our city. Fortunately, the tide is turning. A weight has been lifted. Millions of Americans overcame barriers to cast their votes on Election Day. Our republic withstood an insurrection. We have a vaccine for COVID-19. That it's changing the landscape of this pandemic. We have a new, diverse city council that's energized and ready to make your city government a better partner for our community. And we have new Democratic majorities in both the House and the Senate. Now, we must harness this turning tide. We must focus on partnership and on collaboration. Together, we can ensure that Portland's future reflects our collective values. Portlanders have always been creative, resourceful, and committed to progress. That's part of the reason I love Portland so much. If we work together, meaningful change and a better future are possible for everyone. So I just want to take this moment before we begin our formal proceedings and thank you, Portland, for casting your ballots in the last election, for speaking out forcefully against injustice, and for standing up for democracy. I look forward to all the conversations we're going to have about change as we move into the future. And I ask that you do your part to keep yourself and your loved ones and all Portlanders safe. And again, thank you and good morning to everyone. Colleagues, I don't know if anybody else would like to say something at the beginning of this auspicious new day.
Mr. Mayor Mengus here, I would like to say a few words.
Please, Commissioner Mapson, good morning to you.
Good morning to you, and good morning to my colleagues, and good morning to everyone who's listening to us online. Today is an historic moment. Just a few minutes ago, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris were sworn in as the new president and vice president of the United States. I believe this is the 59th time the American community has come together to inaugurate a new president. Of course, our first inauguration was George Washington's back in 1789. And today's inauguration also marks some important firsts. Of course, we have just inaugurated our first female vice president, and we have inaugurated our first vice president of color. This is both a sign of how far we've come, and I would point out and argue it's a sign of how much work is left to be done. Despite the hard work that lies ahead, I hope that we can make today a day of celebration for our nation and our country. We have a lot to be proud of. In recent years, our country has come together to elect an African-American president. We have elected our first female president, and we have elected our first BIPOC vice president. Plus, today here in Portland, we have our first majority BIPOC city council. That is enormous progress, which I think that we should all celebrate and be proud of. But at the same time, I think it's important to remember that democracy is not just a tradition that we pass down from one generation to the next. Democracy is also a choice that we make every day. And today I want to urge all Portlanders and all Americans and every member of the American community to choose democracy. Let's embrace and celebrate the peaceful transfer of power, as we mentioned before. This is an American tradition which unites George Washington's Day, to this day, from 1789 until this day, every generation of Americans has managed to peacefully transfer power from one president to the next, from one party to the next, and that is what we must do today. So like our ancestors have done today, let's come together as a nation and as a city to peacefully hand power from one president to the next. I think that we have a lot of stuff to celebrate, but I also want to urge everyone to be vigilant. Democracy is not something that we should take for granted. This morning, Biden and Harris were sworn in front of the U.S. Capitol building, but just 2 weeks ago, a mob stormed that very same building with the intent of disrupting the events of today. They climbed walls, they smashed windows, they looted offices, and they left five people dead in their wake. And they also left our democracy shaken. I think that we've all seen the alternatives to a peaceful transfer of power, and that alternative is the politics of violence. Of course, over the past couple of years, we've seen our nation and our city transformed by the politics of violence. As we mentioned before, just a few weeks ago, we saw our nation's capital, the People's Building, captured by a mob determined to disrupt democracy. We saw something about a month ago very similar down in Salem, our state capital, where a mob tried to take over our state capitol building. And here in Portland, on nearly a nightly basis, we see bands of vandals sweep through our city, smashing windows and trying to set buildings on fire in order to accomplish their political aims. I sure hope that today we can, as a people and as a city, choose not to go down that path. Instead, I hope that we can choose and embrace the politics of peace. That's why I want to urge everybody tonight to embrace the politics of peace and celebrate our many accomplishments. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, for this opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Commissioner Mapps. I don't know if anybody else would like to jump in.
Hello.
Hi, how are you doing? Commissioner Rubio, it's good to see you. Good morning.
Good morning. So like all of you, I'm very thrilled for what today means for our nation and for restoring hope and some initial measure of safety for some. We still have work to do for so many people who've suffered and lived in fear for the last 4 years. And in these last 4 years, we've all witnessed the harm caused by an administration whose interests were not centered in compassion or humility and actively fought against that value from a constant attacks towards immigrants and overt racism to failed pandemic response and political targeting of our own city that seems, you know, like a, for a while it seemed like a nightmare that was never ending. Yet, despite all of the hardship that our vulnerable communities, our BIPOC communities, working families have been shouldering, we've all had the privilege of working very closely with community members and leaders across the state and the nation who saw the light and the opportunity and hope at the end of the tunnel and who kept hope and faith in a new day and in our community alive. And we've all witnessed this resiliency firsthand. So I'm thinking of them today, and I'm very eager and looking forward to rebuilding and fortifying the foundations of our democracy. But this time with our communities at the center. And already this administration has appointed a historic cabinet that are predominantly women and people of color. And so the promise of this leadership is already palpable and it's exciting. And they've already taken important steps to address several issues that are very important to all of us. And something incredibly important to me, which is why I wanted to speak, is that this administration has committed to a new push for comprehensive immigration reform for all 11 million undocumented immigrants, nearly 113,000 of them who proudly call themselves Oregonians as well. And I can understand, you know, a lot of our impacted community who's been shouldering this weight over the last 4 years, the optimistic skepticism that might be there, wanting to trust. We are all tired, but we're also all resilient. And so I'm prepared to work with this administration on this promise to all of our community and to stand ready for much needed accountability and reconciliation and rebuilding that's going to happen nationally and here at home. So I want to offer my congratulations to President Biden and Vice President Harris, and congratulate all of us as well. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Commissioner Rubio. Commissioner Ryan, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor. Good morning, colleagues. I really am moved by everything that's been said. I tend to shy away from national issues in general. I'm a role clarity nerd, so I just pretty overwhelmed with what we're doing right here in Portland. But today is so special, and it is every 4 years. And I've watched every inauguration address that I could think of, because I've always been a little political geek. And I didn't like it half the time, who was speaking. I didn't vote for them or didn't want them to win, but I still always watched. And today was really refreshing on so many levels. I believe President Biden when he said he's putting his whole soul into this job. I really trust somebody that has endured so much pain in their life and suffering. You know, he's been widowed, he's lost children. He's a elder that decided to suit up and do what's best for his country at this time. And you know, someone early on when I often wanted to vote for a third party candidate. And when I was in college, a professor said, well, you know, this really comes down to two things, federal justices and international affairs. So don't overthink this. And so I can't tell you how relieved I am that we have somebody that, in my humble opinion, will make much better decisions and represent our country in the global stage in a way that will make me proud. I just wanna say I'm thinking about him and his family today, and Vice President Harris and her family, that beautiful family. And I just hope that everyone today can take a breath and be grateful that we have somebody of good conscience really wanting to do the best thing for our country at this time. I really believe we have a healer in chief. And I hope that our city can align with that. And I believe we are, and we will. And I'm just so grateful to be a part of this city council in this city of Portland on this beautiful day. And it's even the sunshine this morning was wonderful to experience. And I looked at North Delaware Street in a much different way today when I ran by it. So that's my homage to President Biden. All right. Have a good day, everyone.
Thank you, Commissioner Ryan. Commissioner Hardesty, good morning again.
Good morning. Thank you, Mayor. It's been wonderful listening to the comments from all my colleagues. I just want to thank the activists that the day after 45 was elected, took to the street and continued to demand change. I want to thank the Black women all across the country who continue to stand in line to vote for 4, 5, and 6 hours, and we act like that's normal. But in white upper middle class communities, they don't have any weight at all. I want to thank the sense of hope that we all have this morning. The reality is that, yes, we have a change in leadership, but we still have a federal government that isn't as responsive as we would like to see it be. It is a new day. It's a new opportunity. And I am hopeful that with the change at the federal level, we will have partners at the federal level in our federal government to actually help provide the resources necessary for us to get out of this economic devastation that we're in. I gotta say, I woke up this morning with a bounce. I was like excited. It's like, it's here. Is it really, really, really gonna happen? And it did happen, I watched. It did happen. Yes, I think for me, it is the sense of hope and opportunity, and then remembering that even when Democrats control both houses and the presidency, we still did not address the racially inequality that is still systemic in the United States of America. So hopefully this time we'll do better. And we will actually be committed to making sure that our most vulnerable community members are the ones that we prioritize. It's a pleasure to be part of this council and this new beginning that we are all about to experience. So I'm holding on tight. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Commissioner Hardesty. Thank you to all of my colleagues. This is Wednesday, January 20th, 2021. This is a morning session of the Portland City Council. Keelan, good morning. Can you please call the roll?
Good morning, Mayor. Rubio.
Here.
Ryan.
Here.
Hardesty.
Here.
Maps.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. Under Portland City Code and state law, the City Council is holding this meeting electronically. All members of the council are attending remotely by video and teleconference, and the city has made several avenues available for the public to listen to the audio broadcast of this meeting. The meeting is available to the public on the city's YouTube channel, EGovPDX, www.portlandoregon.gov/video, and channel 30. The public can also provide written testimony to council by emailing the council clerk at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. The council is taking these steps as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and the need to limit in-person contact and to promote physical distancing. The pandemic is an emergency that threatens the public health, safety, and welfare, which requires us to meet remotely by electronic communications. Thank you to everyone for your continued patience, flexibility, and understanding as we manage through this difficult situation to conduct the city's business. We have no communications today, colleagues, and with that, we'll jump right into our first time certain item, which is item number 33, please, Keelan.
Mayor, would you like me to read the...
Oh, I'm sorry, Robert. How could I forget? Good morning to you, Robert. How are you today?
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the council clerk's office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or the first readings of ordinances. The published council agenda at portlandoregon.gov/auditor contains information about how and when you may sign up for testimony while the city council is holding electronic meetings. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When your time is up, the presiding officer will ask you to conclude. Disruptive conduct, such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being placed on hold or ejected for the remainder of the electronic meeting. Finally, please be aware that all council meetings are recorded.
All right, thank you, Robert. Sorry, I almost forgot you there.
No problem, thank you.
Good to see you. Item number 33, please, Keelan.
Proclaim January 22nd, 2021 to be Genealogical Forum of Oregon Day.
Colleagues, the Genealogical Forum of Oregon, based right here in the city of Portland, is celebrating its 75th anniversary on January 22nd. The Genealogical Forum of Oregon's mission is to promote an interest in genealogy and to preserve and to provide genealogical and historical records and information through their extensive research library and educational offerings, all of which are available to the public. Thank you to GFO President Vince Patton and GFO's all-volunteer board and committee leaders for your dedication to this important mission and to expanding access to historical resources for our region. I'm going to now read the proclamation, and I'm told that quite a few folks who are involved in this organization are watching live, and we thank them for all the great work that they do. And now it's my honor on behalf of the entire Portland City Council to read this proclamation. Whereas the Genealogical Forum of Oregon is an all-volunteer organization dedicated to the understanding of both personal histories and common experiences. And whereas the GFO's library the largest genealogy library in the Pacific Northwest, is a vibrant and vital part of Portland's cultural community. And whereas the GFO is blazing a new Oregon trail of accessibility by digitizing print resources and expanding its online educational opportunities. And whereas the GFO is celebrating 75 years in Portland on January 22nd, 2021, now therefore I, Ted Wheeler, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim January 22nd, 2021 to be Genealogical Forum of Oregon Day in Portland and encourage all residents to observe this day. Thank you to all of you who are staff, leaders, and volunteers for the Genealogical Forum of Oregon. We appreciate so much your contributions to the community, and we look forward to the next 75 years as well. Thank you. Next item is the consent agenda. Keelan, have any items been pulled off of our consent agenda?
We've had no requests.
Very good. Please call the roll on the consent agenda.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Maps.
Aye.
Wheeler.
I just want to point out that item number 36 on the consent agenda is the approval of a grant of $150,000 to Travel Portland for a winter spring advertising campaign. This is something that the council has done on a regular basis. It takes on a sense of urgency this year as we seek to encourage folks to come downtown, obviously safely and within the limits of COVID restrictions, but there are many things going on in Portland with that safety in mind, and we encourage people to be aware of that. And so I just want to thank my colleagues for supporting this grant to Travel Portland for both their winter and spring advertising campaigns. I vote aye, and the consent agenda is approved. To the regular agenda, item number 38, please, Elon.
Authorize short-term subordinate urban renewal and redevelopment bonds on behalf of Prosper Portland to finance projects in urban renewal areas.
Colleagues, this proposed legislation authorizes the issuance of taxable short-term bonds that are secured by tax increment revenues. The short-term bonds will be issued on behalf of Prosper Portland to finance projects in each respective urban renewal area. We have debt manager Matt Gearock here today to provide any additional information we may want. Welcome, Matt. How are you today?
Good. Thank you, Mayor Wheeler. Good morning, commissioners. For the record, I'm Matt Gearock, debt manager within the Bureau of Revenue and Financial Services. I'm also joined by Tony Barnes, finance manager with Prosper Portland. The purpose of this ordinance is to provide ongoing funding to Prosper Portland to carry out plans of urban renewal areas. This ordinance allows the city's debt management division to carry out a periodic issuance of short-term indebtedness for urban renewal area projects for the next 3 years. As background, the City of Portland, through Prosper Portland, currently maintains 6 urban renewal areas with remaining capacity for projects. Urban renewal areas are also frequently referred to as tax increment financing districts. Under state of Oregon law, property taxes generated from the incremental assessed value of an urban renewal area must be used to repay indebtedness. To accommodate this technical requirement of Oregon law, the City of Portland issues indebtedness through either long-term bonds, lines of credit, or short-term overnight indebtedness, or a combination thereof. The third option, short-term overnight indebtedness, is typically borrowed and then repaid overnight. This results in the lowest financing costs and effectively provides Prosper Portland with the ability to fund projects on a pay-as-you-go basis with currently available property taxes as they are received. Pay-as-you-go funding is public finance jargon for cash funding. Again, this proposed ordinance allows the city's debt management division to issue short-term indebtedness secured solely by the respective tax increment revenues of the six TIF districts listed in the ordinance. Also, issuance will be limited in any fiscal year to a specific dollar amount for each of the six urban renewal areas. Previously, in 2017, City Council authorized the issuance of short-term urban renewal area indebtedness for 3 years, and this ordinance is a re-up for the next 3 years through fiscal year 22-23. Upon City Council's authorization, the City's Debt Management Division will enter into agreements with the bank to purchase the overnight indebtedness as soon as March 2021. That is the conclusion of the formal presentation. Again, Tony Barnes and I are happy to answer any questions. Otherwise, thank you for your time and consideration of this item.
Thanks, Matt. Before I ask for testimony, is there anybody who has any questions on this? There will be a quiz. All right, very good. Keelan, do we have any public testimony on this item?
We don't have anyone on the call for this item.
All right, Matt, thanks for steering us straight on this. This is a first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading. Next up, item 39.
Amend building demolition code to require major residential alteration projects to comply with the same site control regulations as residential demolitions, consistent with related administrative rule.
Commissioner Ryan.
Yes, good morning, colleagues, again. Today I'm requesting that the council adopt amendments to the residential demolition code. The council recently amended the demolition code to strengthen the site control measures designed to manage dust and debris and other materials that may contain asbestos and lead-based paint during residential demolitions. A major residential alteration project is when 50% or more of the exterior walls are removed to the foundation, and it can generate just as much dust and debris as a demolition. So when BDS updated its administrative rule to be consistent with the changes we made to the demolition code, they also expanded the scope of the site control requirements to include those major residential alteration projects. This proposed ordinance makes the demolition code consistent with the revised administrative rule. I now turn this over to Mike Leafield and Nancy Thornton with the Bureau of Development Services, and take it away.
Thank you, Commissioner Ryan. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. My name's Nancy Thornton. I'm a Code and Policy Analyst with the Bureau of Development Services. And with me today is Mike Leafield, who is a supervisor in the Property Compliance Division at BDS. Also want to welcome the new commissioners. Thank you for being here. This is a great day. The ordinance before you today, as the commissioner said, it amends the demolition code so that it's consistent with the related administrative rules that we recently adopted. The rule was shared with the many stakeholders who had helped us craft the rules and the changes to the demolition code, including back in June when we reviewed the proposed rules with the stakeholders, then again when we presented the code to council in the fall, and then finally again when we adopted the rules in December. We've also communicated these changes in our outreach materials, and we'll continue to do so. When we presented the code changes back to the council in September, we didn't identify the major alteration provisions in the code that also needed to be amended to support the changes in the rule. So this ordinance makes the admin rule and the demo code consistent with each other. That's pretty much it. Thank you for your time. And Mike and I are here to answer any questions you might have about the ordinance.
Colleagues, any questions that you have at this particular juncture? It's pretty straightforward. Thank you, Commissioner Ryan, for this as well. Do we have any public testimony on this ordinance, Keelan?
No one is on the call for this item.
All right, very good. This is a first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading. Next up, item number 40.
Authorized conveyance of city-owned real property located at 5827 Northeast Prescott Street and financing in amount not to exceed $8,025,000 to Northeast Prescott Limited Partnership or a Community Development Partners, Inc., Native American Youth and Family Center affiliate for development of a new 50-unit affordable housing project.
Dan, this is awesome. Tell us about it.
I am delighted to. Good morning again, colleagues. The Hayu Tillic development is the fourth project that combines capital funds from Portland's housing bond with funding for supportive services from the Joint Office of Homelessness Services to provide housing for our most vulnerable residents. This is really a unique project, and it leverages our city-owned site in an amenity-rich location to serve the Coley neighborhood. We want to thank the co-developers, partners, starting with NAYA, American Youth and Family Center, for bringing this project forward to increase housing opportunities for low-income families and individuals during a time of great economic uncertainty, and for designing a project that responds to the critical need for culturally specific services, as Native Americans continue to be disproportionately represented among Portland's houseless population. This project will help the critical needs of residents in Northeast Portland on a site close to full-service grocery store, parks, gardens, Mexican markets, a pharmacy, transit options, and schools. I will turn this over to Director Callahan for a presentation, but I'd also like to just take a moment to welcome the Executive Director of NAYA, Paul Lumley, and the CEO of Community Development Partners, Eric Payne. Take it away, Shannon.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. Shannon Callahan of the Portland Housing Bureau. It's truly my pleasure to be here today to ask for your approval of this affordable housing development and the transfer of land to make the Hayu Tillic Sum possible. As Commissioner Ryan mentioned, this is the fourth project of the housing bond to move in construction, joining two other projects that are already in operation and housing Portlanders. Keelan, could you put up the slides? I'm not sure if they're up or not. Thank you very much. If you wouldn't mind advancing to the next slide. This map represents and shows where the Hayu Tillic Sum will be located. It will be located very close to another Portland Housing Bond project in the Kelly neighborhood. As I'm sure you're all aware, affordable housing in the Kelly neighborhood is very needed, and we are very pleased that both of these projects will be moving into construction in spring of this year. Next slide, please. Community Development Partners and NAYA Family Center have entered into a partnership to develop this vibrant new community asset located at 58th and Northeast Prescott in the heart of the Cully neighborhood. Next slide, please. The Housing Bureau purchased this site in 2018, specifically for the purposes of redeveloping the site. I did want to note that there was a household living at the site, and I'm very proud to say that with relocation assistance, they have actually purchased their first home. And so not only is this going to provide a new housing site for 50 new units, but we've also been able to move a family from rentership into homeownership in the process, and we're very excited for that family. This site is, as Commissioner Ryan noted, very centrally located and probably most notably located directly near an Albertsons grocery store, which is such a critical service, especially in the age that we're living, to be able to walk to you, get your groceries, to be able to get what you need very easily for your family. It's one of three sites that the Housing Bureau offered in our 2019 bond solicitation. Next slide, please. The project and its services and partners are tailored to serve the Native American and Alaska Native community and people exiting homelessness. The development will provide a home to 50 families and approximately 120 people. 9 of the units will be paired with wraparound supportive housing services. 17 of the units will be deeply affordable to families who make less than 30% of area median income. 11 of the units are set to serve families who make less than half of the area median income, and the remaining 22 units will serve households at or below 60% of area median income. Next slide, please. The project is also planned to serve families with the addition of 9 3-bedroom units, which is a rarity both in the private market and the affordable market. And we're very excited that NAIA has chosen to ensure that large family size units will be available. 11 of the units will be 2 bedrooms. The project is also on track to reach Earth Advantage Gold certification, but is trying to reach platinum if it can. As I mentioned, construction is expected to start this spring and welcome families next summer. Next slide, please. To ensure culturally appropriate and specific services to holistically meet the needs of households transitioning from homelessness to housing, NAIA is partnering with NARA, the Native American Rehabilitation Association, to provide both resident and supportive housing services using the Housing First model, with case management and peer support focused on housing stability and retention. Services will be offered related to mental health, income support, wellness, and social connection. As well, there'll be access to culturally specific and supportive programming, including powwows, elder support groups, and after-school activities. The Portland Housing Bond Funds, next slide if you would mind, will leverage an additional $11 million in other funding sources, from tax credits to bank loans, energy incentives, and Portland SDC exemptions. And next slide, please. With your approval today, we will convey the land to the partnership and as well the funding necessary to develop 50 new units of affordable housing. And with that, it would be my great pleasure to turn it over to the Executive Director of the NAIA Family Center, Mr. Paul Lumley. Paul?
You're on mute, Paul.
Okay. God, how many times do I do that? It is such a pleasure to see you all today, and such a historic day, too. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, all the new City Council members. Congratulations on your new roles. The entire City Council, all your staff, we really appreciate all that you do for the Native community. As mentioned, my name is Paul Lumley. I'm a citizen of the Yakima Nation and Executive Director at the Native American Youth and Family Center. And we are so grateful for your ongoing commitment to create housing and housing opportunities for the Native American community. As you know, there's a great need for housing in the Native community. And I just wanna make sure that you understand that we are dedicated partners with you to address the very real Native housing crisis in Portland. We're also very excited about bringing yet another housing project to the Cully neighborhood, which is where NAIA is located. This particular project is going to be a focus on permanent supportive housing, which is something that we all know is dearly needed in the Native community. We actually started about 3 years ago trying to create a pathway for new housing opportunities in the Native community near NAIA's family center with our wraparound services. This is our third project in the Cully neighborhood, Hayutiluksum. Just a quick explanation on the name. Hayutiluksum is translated as many nations or many tribes. Hayu is the Chinook Wawa word for many. Tiluksum is like the peoples or several tribes or nations. It's the plural form of Tilikum, actually, which is named after the newest bridge here in Portland. It's less than 2 miles from NAIA. It's also less than 2 miles from the PCC Workforce Center, which is also going to provide great opportunities, not just at NAIA for our close proximity for our programs and our post-secondary educational opportunities, but we also hope to collaborate with PCC and really help change the lives of children and families that are living in the neighborhood. So by the end of next year, with all three projects being completed, we'll be the proud owners, co-owners of 165 new housing units, which is pretty exciting. And this is going to be also, you know, of course, a focus on targeting the Native community. And we'll be partnering with NARA, as mentioned earlier. In fact, we look forward to our continued partnership and growing our partnership with community development partners, who you'll hear from next, hopefully, and also NARA. And we're going to be using our lessons learned from the Saika Ilahi, is that first project that you were all a part of, which, by the way, won many national awards. And thank you again for your ongoing support and partnership for that project, which was historic in its nature. Also wanted to thank Director Shannon Callahan for your continued leadership and support for the Native community. You've been an amazing partner to work with. You've helped us grow in so many ways and helped us build our internal capacity and experience in this arena. I just want to thank you specifically, Director Shannon Callahan. So we believe that the answers to our most complex Native housing challenges in the city really come directly from those experiencing housing insecurity. And we will pledge to continue to listen to our clients and community members to make sure that the housing solutions that we're creating are appropriate and will serve the needs of the community we're serving. So thank you again. Thank you so much for all your support. And we look forward to continuing to working with you in the Portland Native community. Thank you again.
Thank you, Paul. And I believe that the director, Executive Director Eric Peen, is also on the phone. Thank you for your kind comments and for your commitment to our community, Paul. Eric, are you available for our brief comments?
I am. Can you hear me okay? Good morning, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. We're really excited to be here. I'm Eric Peen, the CEO of Community Development Partners. I'm exciting to be here on such a joyous day, both for this project and a national level. We're really elated to be embarking on our third project together in partnership with NAIA, providing housing and services for the Native community in Portland. All of the projects are in the Cully neighborhood, which is great for us to have such a long-term focus in one condensed, focused geographic area. The partnership with NAIA has been really groundbreaking. As Paul mentioned, the first project that was completed won several national awards, and it's just been a really great experience for CDP and NAIA and our collaboration as we've like developed and evolved together and really learned a lot about working with one another. And well, there's so many lessons that were difficult challenges in the first project, Nisaika Ilahi, that we learned that we're excited to be rolling out and have that under our belt on the next two projects, one that's already under construction, Mamuk Tokati, and then this project, Hayutiliksim. Our first project, Nisaika Ilahi, leased up successfully and is housing over 50 Native families, so it's been a great, great success. With NAIA, we're long-term mission-driven owners, so we'll be working collaboratively, not only to develop the project and get the lease up done, but also to stay hands-on in the post-development life cycle with the service delivery. And we appreciate all the commitment from your team, from Shannon's team, all the diligent work to get us here and the funding from the city. So thank you very much for all of the commitments you've made to the Native community.
And that concludes our presentation this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, colleagues. Any questions at this point? Keelan, do we have any, I'm sorry, my daughter's dog is like chewing on my ankle. Do we have any public testimony for this item?
Well, no one is on the call for this item.
All right, very good. This is an emergency ordinance. Please call the roll.
Rubio.
This is a wonderful project, and I want to thank Paul Lumley and also Oscar Arana from NAIA and Eric Peen and the rest of the PHB team for making this project a reality. And I'm a longtime fan of Paul Lumley and NAIA, and longtime former colleague in my prior role at Latino Network. And it's such a pleasure to be here today with you to support this project. NAIA plays such a critical role in our community by focusing on the holistic health and well-being of the Portland area Indigenous community, from youth development to education to critical safety net services and housing, but more importantly, lifting up Native voices, advocacy, culture, pride. Projects like this demonstrates the powerful impact of community-centered and community-led development projects and the importance of culturally responsive services, culturally specific services too, to ensure communities have an opportunity to thrive and to self-determine their lives. And we need more of them. And if we are to be successful in closing the housing gap for our most vulnerable communities experiencing the most extreme of these disparities, we must continue to invest and partner with culturally specific community-based nonprofit organizations like NAIA that hold the trust of the community and then honor this trust that they hold. NAIA is fulfilling and succeeding its mission every single day, and it takes great leadership and talented, dedicated staff to do this. I'm proud to say that I've witnessed the deep impact of NAIA's housing opportunities programs in our communities, and running a full service nonprofit and school while developing these projects is no small undertaking. So I want to thank you, Paul, you and your team, and please accept our full appreciation for all that you do in service to building a thriving community. So I'm thrilled to support this project, and I look forward to celebrating with you at its completion. I vote aye.
Ryan.
Yes, good morning again, and I really appreciate the comments from Commissioner Rubio. I just want to thank Paul Lumley for being here today, and also you, Eric. It was nice to meet you recently, and great leadership, Shannon, once again. I remember when I was first on the school board, there was an item on the agenda to transform a school that was vacant into NAIA's new home. And I remember the executive director at that time saying that we vision having some housing opportunities too in the city. So I'm reminiscing and with a lot of joy right now to think that this is a fine example of that vision coming to fruition. The construction of this project keeps us on track to exceed the city's goals under the Portland's housing bond. That's also good news. This project comes as a result of significant collaboration among our funding partners, including the Joint Office of Homeless Services, Oregon Housing Community Services, Citibank, and National Equity Fund. And again, I want to acknowledge the NAIA, American Youth and Family Center, the community development partners, and the rest of the team for this commitment in completing this project and serving the Portland residents who are most in need. This is a good day to be on the City Council when we can vote yes on such an outstanding project. I vote aye.
Hardesty.
I want to start by really thanking Director Shannon Callahan and Paul. I remember years ago, it feels like years ago, this project was a vision of NAIA. And I know that it was challenging, as all affordable housing projects are, to put together. There were stops and starts along the way. But I am so proud that we actually came to an excellent project like this. I am so thrilled that we're partnering with NAIA and Eric, your organization as well. And what it shows is that sometimes it takes a little longer. Sometimes it requires us to really invest in culturally specific organizations so that they are prepared to do the work that we know that they can do. And I think this project is a clear reflection of no one leaving the table, right? Everybody coming back over and over and over again, looking for a solution that would work. This is going to be such a good resource for the Collie community. And Paul, you and I have stood at where that dirt is, and you shared your vision of what was possible. And I'm just so proud to support this proposal, because it's your vision that's coming to life, and it's Director Callahan's intentionality to make sure that she could figure out how to make this work for NAIA. And here we are, it's working, and I am very thrilled to vote aye.
Rubio. Maps?
I'd like to echo all the praise that my colleagues have shared today. In particular, I'd like to call out Commissioner Ryan, the Housing Bureau, and NAIA for putting together what I really view as a model project. I love the fact that we're getting these affordable housing bond dollars out the door. Obviously, the city needs affordable housing now more than ever. Supportive housing is just innovative and wonderful. The culturally specific programming I love too, and supporting, you know, one of my favorite neighborhoods in the city, Cully, is also just incredibly impressive. Great work. I hope that we see more projects like this in the future, and I look forward to supporting them in the future, and I'm very proud to vote aye today.
Wheeler.
I want to thank Commissioner Ryan and his staff for shepherding this through. This is a significant positive step for the city of Portland. And I'd like to shape my remarks maybe by giving a little bit of context. Government is under extreme scrutiny right now. And it is so easy to criticize government that it almost sounds cliche to attack government because it's just assumed that government can't get it right. And so that's why I want to take a moment and give some context here. First of all, this started with the community, not just the vision for this particular project. And Paul, I want to acknowledge your leadership and Eric on a really tremendous and exciting vision. And then having the fortitude, frankly, to push the vision through. I want to thank Director Callahan in particular. Your leadership of the Housing Bureau has been exemplary and it's been innovative. And dare I say it, you've taken a lot of risks. And I want to go back to the first risk that was taken with the Portland Housing Bond. And that was the decision to slow it down and to intentionally onboard community, particularly community that was disproportionately impacted by the lack of affordable housing, but also those in the community who often don't have voices as dollars are being doled out throughout the community. And there was some heat that came down upon you and the Housing Bureau and others for having slowed that process down in order to intentionally onboard the community. And through that process, there were two commitments that you made. Number one, you committed that the housing dollars, half of it would go to very low income. And you committed that we would reflect the desires, particularly of communities of color and low income folks, that more of the units, in fact, half would be reserved for family size housing. And that was a bold, innovative, principled stand for you to take. And it also reflected the reality of the need and the gaps in the community. And as Commissioner Ryan just pointed out, here we are, you know, 4+ years later, where you have not only met all of the criteria that were originally established that the voters overwhelmingly supported back in 2016, and thank you, by the way, to the people of this community for looking out, having the backs of others who don't have access to safe affordable housing. But you have surpassed the goals now that were established. So, we spend a lot of time in this council chamber, our virtual council chamber, second guessing ourselves, criticizing ourselves, demanding more accountability from ourselves, highlighting our shortcomings. And we don't take enough time to really step back and breathe and acknowledge the really fantastic work that is being done in this community through partnership with community organizations, with our city bureaus, our city staff, our effective leadership at the bureau level. And so I want to take this moment and just say, you know what? Sometimes we really get it right and we hit it out of the ballpark. And this is one of those times. And so I just didn't want this to pass without acknowledging the importance of what this offers and the, given the spirit of the day, which is a sense of expectation and hope, with a new administration in Washington, D.C. My hope and expectation is that this becomes the template for the kinds of programs and projects that we do in the years ahead. And what we've shown is we can do it. We can make it happen. And so I just want to acknowledge that. Dan, thank you for your leadership. Director Callahan, thank you for yours. To our community partners, Paul, Eric, and so many others who've worked for so long, thank you. And to my colleagues on the city council who show vision, really show vision for the future, because we could have stopped at just saying maximum number of units, bang for the buck. We could have stopped there. And we would have had the support of the majority of the community, but we wouldn't have really filled the gaps that are the most extreme in this community without the kind of thoughtfulness that went into this project. So good work, all. I am very happy to vote aye. The ordinance is approved, and this project is going to be fantastic. Next up.
Maybe we'll even be able to meet in person when it opens, huh?
I'm sort of counting on it.
Me too. I'm missing these grand openings.
Yeah, and I'm getting kind of tired of the kitchen table myself. Item number 41, somewhat related.
Approve application under the Multiple Unit Limited Tax Exemption Program under the Inclusionary Housing Program for the 146th East Building 100 located at 20 Northeast 146th Avenue.
Commissioner Ryan.
Yes, thank you, colleagues. We have three, count them, three multi-unit limited tax exemption applications today, two of which are emergency ordinances and one that is not. Items 41 and 42 ask us to consider approving the multi-unit tax exemption applications for 146th East in Northeast Portland. I request that these two items be read together. Thank you, colleagues, and I will be returning this item over to staff for a detailed presentation. Please take it away, Matt and Dory.
Keelan, could you go ahead then and read 42 as well? Do you want 43 as well, Commissioner?
No, let's do 41 and 42 together because they're emergency ordinances.
All right. Yeah, good call. 40. Can you read 42 as well, please, Keelan?
Thank you, ma'am.
Of course. Approve application under the Multiple Unit Limited Tax Exemption Program under the Inclusionary Housing Program for 146th East Building 300, located at 30 Northeast 146th Avenue.
Back to you, Commissioner Ryan.
Good morning, Mayor, Commissioners. Thank you, Commissioner Ryan, for the introduction. I'm Dory Van Bockel, Development Incentives Program Manager at the Housing Bureau. I'm going to share the screen and put up the presentation. Hopefully. Okay. So just as a quick review from some of what you heard last week about the Inclusionary Housing Program. So starting in February of 2017, any building adding 20 or more new units is required to contribute to the city's rent-restricted housing inventory through the Inclusionary Housing Program. That does also fall into place for sale units as well, but today we're talking about rental developments. Developers must choose from several options in order to fulfill inclusionary housing requirements. They can provide inclusionary housing units in an otherwise market rate building, send units to another building, or pay into the inclusionary housing fund. The multiple unit limited tax exemption or multi program is one of the financial incentives provided to buildings restricting units under the inclusionary housing program rather than paying a fee in lieu. Each multi application comes before City Council for approval. And as mentioned today, we are bringing three. The first two that we're discussing are the 146 East buildings, 100 and 300. So for the building 100, it is a three-story, 30-unit residential-only apartment building comprised of 24 one-bedroom and six two-bedroom units. The developers chosen to restrict at least 8% of the units at 60% median family income for the 99 years under the program. That amounts to 2 of the total 30 units. So this building has also opted to restrict the remaining 28 units to households earning up to 60% of median family income, making all 30 units restricted for the 99-year period. So to look at the exemption details, under the Inclusionary Housing Program, buildings outside of the Central City Plan District are eligible for a property tax exemption on just the Inclusionary Housing units. However, in this case, since all 30 units are will receive the exemption for the 10 years since they are all affordable. The land will be fully taxed, and the estimated tax exemption for this building is $270,657. And across the 99-year term, this amounts to $91 of foregone revenue annually per restricted unit. In comparison, the annual rent reduction per restricted unit is estimated at $1,390. And across the 99-year term, the total rent reduction for the building is over $4 million. So compared to, again, that $270,000 exemption value. In addition to the 10-year tax exemption provided by the multi, the restricted units in this building will receive an exemption of the Affordable Housing Construction Excise Tax and system development charges that otherwise would have been due on the restricted units. And this is the third IH multi application for this particular owner group. I guess I could have scrolled forward there. So going on to the next building, the fourth application for this ownership group is 146 East Building 300, which is also a three-story building with 24 units, comprised of 18 one-bedroom and 6 two-bedroom units. The developer, I think I went too far on this one. There you go. The developers chosen to restrict at least 8% of the units at 60% median family income for 99 years under inclusionary housing, which would be 2 of the total 24, but like with the other building, has opted to restrict all of the units, all 24, at 60% of median family income for 99 years. Under the inclusionary housing program, like with the other one, all of these units are affordable, so all of them will be receiving the tax exemption, but the land will be fully taxable still. The total estimated exemption value for this building is $215,198. And across the 99-year term, this amounts to $91 of foregone revenue annually per restricted unit, compared to an average annual rent reduction of $1,374. So again, over the total 99-year term, we estimate a rent reduction of over $3 million compared to the $200-some-thousand-dollar exemption value. So I will pause there before we move on to the other project. I can stop sharing my screen for a moment.
Colleagues, any questions at this point? Not seeing any.
Okay, no questions. These are emergency ordinances. Should we just, is there any testimony or do we go to the vote?
Testimony first. Is there a testimony, Keelan, on items 41 or 42?
No one is on the call for these items.
All right. Please call the roll on item 41.
Rubio.
Happy to support this. I vote aye.
Ryan.
Thank you, Dory, for that detailed update. And I think you continue, our team continues to do all that we can with the codes that were offered. To provide in this housing, and let it be noted that it's also close to public transit, which is always a part of the win for these types of projects. I vote aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Maps.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. Item 42, please call the roll.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty?
Aye.
Maps?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. That ordinance is also approved. Item 43, please.
Approve application under the Multiple Unit Limited Tax Exemption Program under the Inclusionary Housing Program for SHIFT, located at 5680 North Montana Avenue.
Commissioner Ryan?
Yes, colleagues. The staff will now present a non-emergency item, Multi-Unit Limited Tax Exemption Program application. And so I believe, is it Dory, are you back with us? Take it away. Or is it Matt?
I will resume. So again, Dory Van Bockel with Housing Bureau to discuss then the third project before us today, which is called SHIFT. And that is a five-story, 73-unit residential-only apartment building comprised of 54 studio, 9 one-bedroom, 5 two-bedroom, and 5 three-bedroom units. This developer has chosen to restrict 8% of the units at 60% of median family income for 99 years under the Inclusionary Housing Program. So that totals 6 of the 73 units within the building. They have chosen to use the reconfigure option within the Inclusionary Housing Program to provide an alternative mix based on the total number of bedrooms within the Inclusionary Housing option selected. By using the reconfiguration program, which allows units with two bedrooms or more to result in a building with a smaller overall number of restricted units, but provides family size units where there otherwise wouldn't be. Based on that option, the originally required amount of units would have been 4 studio, 1 one-bedroom, and 1 two-bedroom units, or 7 bedrooms. And through utilizing the reconfiguration, the building will be providing 1 studio and 2 three-bedroom inclusionary housing units. And I know that we shared some changes that we're looking at proposing to the program for future projects last week. We also are looking at an additional change. Just I wanted to mention it real quickly that obviously would not apply to these projects under review, but we are looking at in our proposed administrative rule changes to also put a size percentage based on the units being reconfigured so that the family size units will be larger. So we will, you'll see that coming probably later this week, we'll get those published. So I'm happy to later share that. But moving back to the SHIFT project specifically, just wanted to show the exemption details. So since, again, in this case, the building is outside of the Central City Plan District, the 3 units and associated percentage of residential common areas will receive the exemption for 10 years, and then the other 70 market rate units in the land will be fully taxed. The estimated tax exemption, sorry about my dogs, estimated tax exemption for the building is just over $35,000. Across the 99-year term, this amounts to $118 of foregone revenue annually per restricted unit. And in comparison, the average annual rent reduction per restricted unit is $16,744. So across the 99 year, almost $5 million, again, compared to that $35,000 estimate. In addition to the multi, the restricted units in this building will receive an exemption of the Affordable Housing Construction Excise Tax and system development charges that otherwise would have been due on those units. And this application is the second for the same ownership group to come in with a project under inclusionary housing. So that does conclude my presentation, but I'm happy to answer any questions.
There's a question from Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you. Dory, could you put your screen back up that last page, please?
Yeah, absolutely.
I was trying to get the mayor's attention before you moved, but he was busy.
There it is.
Yes, this one. Thank you. So this is one of those projects that, as you know, it kind of, I always wonder about putting family units into a single building, into a singles building, right? And in this particular case, I believe there's two or three, three bedroom or two bedroom units, that, and then a whole building of studios. And I've asked this question before, and as you're thinking about revising the rules, what is the lived experience for families in a singles building, right? Is that, does it create friction because you have all these single adults and then you have only a couple of households that actually have small children in it? And so I'm always concerned about that very bizarre mix, right? When you go from studios to three bedrooms and you only have a couple of those. I hope as you're rewriting the rules that you will look at whether or not it is a good lived experience for those lower income families that move into buildings that are being built for single individuals, right? I think there's a difference between what a family unit looks, what a family apartment complex looks like, and what a apartment complex built for seniors, for singles looks like, right? So I would really like if you guys would, as you're reviewing the rules about what we can and can't do around these projects, I continue to be worried about that lived experience. Because I know if you're in a singles building and you have one kid that cries, it creates a lot of conflict. So I hope as we're thinking about revising the rules around multi, that we really consider whether or not we are doing a disservice to families with small children by putting them in a building that basically was built for single individuals.
Absolutely. And certainly if you have recommended language or your office would like to discuss it further, we're happy to do so. I think Matt shared with you last week, but right now one of the proposed pieces of language that we have is requiring that there be another market rate unit that has two or more bedrooms for reconfigured dwelling units with three bedrooms. And likewise, a four bedroom unit would need to have a three or more bedroom market rate unit in the building if choosing the reconfiguration option. So it would at least have some market rate and affordable units that were family sized with that change.
Yes, I look forward to continuing that conversation because I think the goal is to have people successfully live in a with their families in a building that was not actually built for families. I'm not a developer, but I would imagine developers are like, oh well, if I get more of a break if I do several bedrooms, then I'll do that, right? But are we really thinking about what the experience is for those families? I remember a couple of them back, we had one that was like just crazy, like 80 apartments, and then like three were affordable units for families. And I just thought those families are gonna have a really hard time living in that complex because it is not built for families.
Okay.
Yeah, happy to continue that conversation later. Thank you.
Absolutely, thanks.
Good. Colleagues, any other questions? Does that complete the presentation?
Yes, it does.
Any public testimony, Keelan?
No, no one is on the call for this item.
All right. Anything else, Commissioner Ryan, before I move this on to second reading?
No, we're ready to go to the second reading.
All right. This is the first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading. And here we are, believe it or not, it's not even 11 o'clock, and we have come to the end of our agenda. It's good seeing
what
you
happens
all.
When it's the Commissioner Ryan show, huh?
It is. It was the Commissioner Ryan show, but it was very efficient and very productive. Thanks to everybody. Have a fantastic day and a safe day, and we'll see you later. We are adjourned.
Here, here.